What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you.
All right, guys, let's talk about something we all need. High quality, comfortable, stylish clothing that actually holds up in real life. Whether you're grinding at work, hitting the gym, or just hanging out, the Normal brand has you covered. I've been rocking their gear, and let me tell you, it's not your average clothing line. They've nailed it perfect with the perfect blend of durability, comfort, style. Whether it's a go-to rugged Henley, a hoodie, a button-down that doesn't make you feel like a stiff, the Normal brand is where it's at. The best part is you can support the show while upgrading your wardrobe. Just hit the link in the description below. Check out their collection. Trust me, once you try it, you'll wonder why you didn't do it sooner. The Normal brand. Made for real life, built to last. Now go check them out.
Shout out to our friends over at Captain Beard Co. Guys, if you are looking for beard care products, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, give Captain Beard Co. a try. They have this unbelievable beard butter, balm, oils, and then it smells amazing. Ladies, if you're looking for something for your men as a gift, to help with their grooming, check them out. Also, if you guys are looking to just set the mood one night, candles, unbelievably smelling candles made with all natural ingredients here locally to St. Louis. Give them a shot. Also, while you're there, use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
Hey there, guys. I really appreciate you checking out the Zach and Pat Show. If you can obviously tell, we are a newer podcast, but one way we're really trying to grow the show is trying to get up the amount of subscribers we have. So, you know, if you're watching the show and you're getting something out of it, we'd really appreciate it if you could click that subscribe button. That would help us out a ton. Please click that button. And now back to the show.
We have a very special guest in studio today. I've been looking forward to this one for a while. This is actually our second time trying this, because the first time we actually had some technical difficulties and lost the audio. But he is a husband, a father, a real estate investor, third degree Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, a UFC veteran and semifinalist on season 12 of The Ultimate Fighter, my jiu-jitsu coach, the great and powerful Kyle Watson.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah,
welcome back for the second round.
Well, thanks. I kind of, you know, we needed that mulligan anyway, because I felt like I felt like I was kind of lame and maybe not as caffeinated as I should have been for that one.
Dude, I was like heartbroken when Murph. He's like, dude, you know, he was
so defeated.
Yeah. He was like, really, he like did not want to tell us that, that it fucked up, and because he knew how, but I was like, oh, we can get him again.
Yeah, that's right. I like doing this kind of stuff. So it's no big deal.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. Well, so, I mean, we might ask you a couple questions that we did the first time, but,
I already forgot. Don't worry.
Yeah. I honestly did too. So, you know, for what originally got you, you know, into martial arts and jiu-jitsu, like did you grow up wrestling, or like, you know, or was it something you kind of always did, or what was the initial like interest into like getting into martial arts?
You know, it wasn't that route. It was kind of a weird route. And, there's a lot of people that know my story, but not everybody. But I'll keep it brief, but small town, played soccer and baseball, didn't even have wrestling, didn't have football. And, I don't know. I never was like a violent kid. I was just pretty ordinary and pretty average at everything. But, I did feel like competitive, you know, and I don't know. I just felt like I always had this desire I couldn't put a finger on, that like I wanted to be good at something. Like I wanted to be, you know, and I was fairly competitive, and just being from a small town, we didn't have like great teams. So it's just like, and I, you know, I was always watching, you know, Van Damme movies and, you know, and just, you know, just thinking, oh man, it's so cool. And just like wishing I knew martial arts, but there wasn't even martial arts in my town, you know? And so I just like, it was one of those, like, you know, I wasn't able to kind of get my feet wet until college. So once I went to college, I'm like, that was one of the first things on my list. It wasn't as much get an education. It was, let's learn some martial arts.
Yeah, let's learn how to fight.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, just sought out some sport clubs and ended up stumbling across jiu-jitsu, and then kind of the rest is history. I mean, a lot of things happened after that, but that's kind of the start. Was not, you know, not until college. And then, you know, just went to the University of Illinois and just started training like kind of part time at the rec center. And then
so you had like a jiu-jitsu club there, kind
of? Yeah, there's a jiu-jitsu club. Well, I actually started with there was a club first called Goshen Jitsu, and there was a guy named Mike. Everybody called him Joker, and I started with them. And And they did a little bit of everything. They did striking, they did throws, they did jiu-jitsu. And I didn't know what I was getting into. I mean, I knew, heard of things, and I watched the UFC, but that's, you know, didn't know much. And I just really found myself, like, I had an affinity and really gravitating towards the submissions. And so the Joker, he just kind of used me as guinea pig, and I'd stay after classes and just let him, like, twist me in knots and beat the shit out of me. And then he's like, hey man, if you like this, let me introduce you to this guy. And then every Friday, Jack McVicker would come and do, you know, jiu-jitsu and Jeet Kune Do, stuff in, like, there at the rec center. And I started there, and I'm like, man, I need to train more. This is awesome. Like, I fell in love with it. But at the time I couldn't afford it. I was a poor college student, and I had scholarships, but I like still had to pay a lot of my college. My parents helped out with some things, but I paid most of my college in. So then I was like, no, I really want to do this. So I just picked up extra shifts at my job, and because I was working part time, and just made it happen. Started training off campus at Jack's regular spot, and going from there.
Uh-huh. And then eventually got into MMA. Is that kind of where the transition, or did you like compete in jiu-jitsu before you got into MMA?
Yeah, I started jiu-jitsu first, did a couple of competitions, but I was just really interested in like seeing, you know, if I could, you know, even though the UFC existed, I never had like any kind of idea that I would be there or get there. That wasn't the goal initially. I felt like, man, I want to kind of test myself. But my coach he taught JKD, but it was more like street fighting stuff, like knees, elbows, headbutts, things like that. It wasn't like striking for like MMA. Time. Yeah. So I had to seek that out. So a couple other guys in the club wanted to do that stuff too. So outside of, you know, training jiu-jitsu, then I would like travel to a bunch of places, and we would get together on our own, because the rec center actually had a room called the combat room. And it was matted wall to wall. And like during open times, you could just go in there and beat the shit out of each other. You know what I mean? So we go in there and do that. I would drive to, you know, Peoria to do my kickboxing. I got a great Muay Thai coach over there, and I'd drive once a week there. I'd go over to Mattoon and train with the wrestlers at Eastern, and most of those guys fought. So it was just like, you know, I was driving all around and making a lot of sacrifices time wise. But I was getting it all in, you know, and that's kind of where I was like, I was putting, cause I didn't have like a one-stop shop to put it all together. Cause it just wasn't,
well, it wasn't there at the time. Yeah. I mean, this was how many years ago now? I mean,
I would have been
not started trying to make you feel old.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I started like 90. I think I started like jiu-jitsu with Jack in like 99. I started like the sport club, like would have been 97, but like jiu-jitsu, actually started jiu-jitsu.
And so did you start training in the gi like right away, or was it like,
yeah, because that club that I started with, a Goshen Jitsu, it was in the gi. Yeah. They had their own belt system. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. At what point was it that you realized like you were better than everybody else, and you were ready to take it to the next level and get in, like become a pro?
Well, that was never, I never thought I was better than everyone. It was one of those things where I had that fire, like I'm going to work hard and it was one of those things where I just kept competing. I think that was it. There was like an ebb and flow of like, you know, where, you know, I had, you know, you're still always like nervous, but there was time in my life where like, you know, I was full of piss and vinegar, and I was like, oh man, I'll fight anybody. You know what I mean? Not that I would beat everybody. I just had the willingness, like, I don't care. I'll fight anyone. And I just would go back and forth between jiu-jitsu and then an MMA fight, and then a jiu-jitsu tournament, and then an MMA fight. I just kept going back and forth, and just kind of kept going and climbing the ladder. And they just got to the point after a couple of wins, I'm like, okay, you know, let's kind of see where this goes. And then, you know, once it turned out that I got, you know, the job offer to work for, you know, for Matt Hughes,
how did that all come about?
Well, it was a bunch of crazy happenings. I'll try to keep it concise, but it's just wild. Like I tell people all the time, you know, I'm a big believer in everything happening for a reason. And there's just so many things that happened that I just feel like couldn't have been coincidental, you know, I mean, just the way things happen is really weird. So like one thing that was helpful is the head coach of the Hit Squad, when it was becoming the Hit Squad, when they were like, hey, we're gonna do this thing, they put in Granite City on that kind of decommissioned military base, because they were hoping that it would bring like some other like revenue and some kind of action to help build up the area. Yeah. So they had like laudable intentions, you know, it was really, really good. And then they were trying to get, you know, get all the everything in place. And Mark Fiore, the head coach, he moved to Raymond, which is like about an hour away from St. Louis. And I had a guy from my hometown that would always write news articles on me. Anytime I had a fight, he would write an article about it. So Mark would see these articles in the paper about this kid from Raymond. He's living in Raymond. You see this kid from Raymond, like, doing these MMA fights. Well, then, I had a friend, one of my students, who we fought alongside each other in MMA, Derek McGuire, but then he was one of my students at the Hit Squad. But anyway, we knew each other beforehand. And then the manager of the Hit Squad, the front desk manager guy, Todd Locks, he was friends with this Derek McGuire, and Derek dropped my name a couple of times. So multiple people in the gym had gotten a heads up about me. And so kind of when it came together, you know, I had an office job after I graduated. I was working in Champaign, and I got a call from Mark Fiore in my office, and just said, "Hey man, you know, we've heard about you, and just wondered what you would think about, you know, moving down, being a jiu-jitsu coach full time at Matt Hughes's gym." I was like, I was just blown away. It's like crazy. It's crazy. And what was wild about it, and I've told this many times too, but what was wild, and just like, I'm a pretty laid back guy, and I don't get stressed out. But this was a very stressful couple of weeks, because literally, like, right in at the same time frame this happened, they had been grooming me at my job to become a director, and they had made an offer for me to move up to Chicago, and my title would have been Medical Programs Director of Chicagoland. So basically, for Kaplan, the test prep company, I would have run all of the MCAT and USMLE programs, the tests you have to take for med school to become a doctor. I would have run all of those programs for all the Kaplan centers in Chicago area. And so I've been high pay, high stress job. And so in the same, I had to make this decision. Do I go up here and like have this high pay, high stress job, or do I get paid like less and do my dream job over here? Well, what ultimately happened that like really helped out is Kaplan just said, "Hey, we always need good managers. This opportunity won't be here, but if you want to come back, there'll always be an open door for you." And I'm like, "Oh, if I didn't burn any bridges,
right,
what the hell? Why not take your chance on a dream?" So yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And then oddly enough, a guy who actually my best friend, my best man at my wedding, his name is Bobby Brown. He's also a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He was living in Alton and he had an extra room. I was like, I asked if I could move in with him. He's like, "Yeah, sure, man." So I moved down and then started working at the gym. And then, he's like, "Hey, I'm sorry, man, I'm moving. I have to sell my house." Well, right around that time, the dorms opened up at the Hit Squad. So I just moved right into the dorms. And I just lived with all the fighters. I mean, I was one too, but I was also a coach. I had a unique situation where, you know, I was expected to be there for all the practices because I'm fighting still myself, but I'm also expected to be a leader and have to coach too. Yeah. So it was like weird, like, you know, running a jiu-jitsu program where in that class, I am the coach. In the MMA classes, I'm still the coach, but everybody's trying to kill me. You know, right? Because I mean? they're like, you know what I mean? So like the MMA jiu-jitsu coach, you know what I mean? So it was a pretty wild experience, you know?
Yeah. So you'd be like teaching a class all sweaty and then, you'd be teaching a class and then have to, you know, suit up and go and train against the guys you were just coaching. And
So like, and it was crazy. I was even talking about this, like, not to name drop, but it's just interesting. Like how many guys came from there. Just a while back, I ran across a picture of Neil Magny wearing a white belt in my class.
Wow.
It was pretty cool. He beat my ass now, but yeah. You know, so, but just crazy, you know, like, you know, just what I got to experience and see. But yeah, it was super hard on my body, really hard on my body, because I would do the pro practice in the morning, do the pro practice at night, and then directly, I mean, literally within 5 minutes of the pro practice, just training with Hughes, or just getting punched in the face by Robbie, or going with this guy or that guy, or whatever, and then throwing a gi on and then teaching a couple back-to-back gi classes. I was like, oh God, it was my dream job. So I loved it. It was just, but it was really hard. I mean, I took
hard
a lot
on your
of
body.
Yeah. I took a lot of naps back then.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, just for those people that don't know, like what you did two pro practices in a day. What does a pro practice look like? Sure.
Yeah. So the way they ran it was different than maybe you might see at some gyms. It was very, and again, this is nothing against them. I've said this before on other times I've had this conversation, but like they were very, Hughes and Fury too had that mentality of like, break them down, build them back up. So it was very like intense. Okay. And I mean, it was in the name, Hughes Intensive Training Hit Squad. That's what it stood for. Right. And it was very like, everything was hard. It was just like, we're going to just be tougher than everybody, you know what I mean? So the morning practice was always strength and conditioning, and not just like strength and conditioning in the sense of like we're going in lifting weights. It was always like just Mondays, it was Hughes ran a plyo class. It was super rough. And then Fury would put together these like terrible like circuits where we would like do like cleans, take these giant boulders, throw them over our shoulder. And then we'd have to run over to the golf course and do like partner carries up a hill. Then we would run back and do rope climbs that were like 24 feet in the air and just all these crazy, anything you could imagine that's just like hard. Abusive. Yes. And then we come back at night and then it would just cycle every other, like Monday, Wednesday, I believe. I think this is right. Monday, Wednesday night pro practice was what they call grapple boxing, where it's basically like MMA gloves, but mostly wrestling and jujitsu with strikes. Then Tuesday, Thursday was always like big gloves, headgear full, like take trying off. To kill each other. Yeah. Like you'd still do takedowns, but if it hit the ground, you'd come back up because we had boxing gloves right, on. You know what I mean? So, but that was every fucking day. And then Friday morning was my favorite because it was just like full MMA, but just you go just a little lighter. So like those fatter puppies, gloves, the puppy ones, and our shin pads, and we would do everything like stand up to the ground and punch. So that was my favorite practice. And then I
could actually do some jujitsu.
Yeah, for sure. So it was just brutal because like you know, I've said before is like you know you're any sport you guys are athletes you know this like 2-a-days aren't meant to be done more than
every
like
day.
More than like part of a season. Like I was doing it every day for like 3.5 years, you know what I mean? Like, jeez. You know, it's like, well, I mean, like I'd have Sundays off, but you know,
so but yeah, that's brutal crazy. On your body, yeah, man.
That's crazy. But I was young and I could handle it then, you know?
Yeah. Right. So how old were you when this whole opportunity presented itself?
So I would have been what, like 2008. I don't know. What was it? 27.
Weren't you a purple belt when you?
Yeah, I was like four. I was just like right after I got down there, I got my brown belt. Just a little bit after, I was a 4-stripe purple belt when I moved down there. I was nervous. Not in like I was confident in like what I knew. I was confident in my jiu-jitsu knowledge and the fact that I had already had several MMA fights. I was confident in that. But it's like when you say now I'm going to be running some practices where there's going to be like elite level guys in there. You start to question yourself a little bit. It's like, okay, I'm only a purple belt, you know, I'm going to be, you know, teaching these guys. So it was rough, but like I found my groove pretty quickly. And a lot of the guys, honestly, man, like their ground game garbage. So like, and not throwing anybody into the bus. Some guys were really, really talented and really tough, but I'm just saying like, you know, from a technical level, like they needed what I was bringing to the table.
Yeah. Wow.
What was it like living in the dorms with everybody? Got any good stories from the dorms?
I have so many good stories. I tell people all the time that, man, I really wish in retrospect that could have been the most amazing
reality show
for sure. Because it's like you think about like, you know, the whole like show and flow from like Daisy Fresh and stuff like that. Like I never saw that show, but I can pretty much guarantee you this was worse and better depending like better for viewers. But worse for the people involved. Yeah, exactly. I mean, so many crazy things happen in those dorms. Some unspeakable, some, you know, it was wild, but it was just interesting. My role was so weird because, you know, I was a coach, but you know, I still was young enough. I want to have a good time too, you know? Sure. So it's just like, you know, it's like, yeah, there's some lines that were like blurred a little bit. You know what I mean?
Any stories you can share?
Man. I mean, just, there's just always like, there was always like work hard, play hard. And there was always like, I mean, there were like fights in the dorms, like people fighting each other. I just was telling a story the other day about,
your car,
car. I was telling the story about the dude getting like zapped in the tongue with a stun gun. Like I got knocked like just out unconscious. Oh, you know man. What I mean? So there's just like, you know, and there's some people, man, it was just crazy. Like there's like one guy that's like, brought his four kids like this. The dorm room wasn't much bigger than this. I mean, like literally like it had a bathroom, a teeny little like sink with a mirror, but it was like a 20-by-20-foot room. And there's like dude that brought like his four kids there and like, uh-huh. or three kids. And like, they're and I'm like, I mean, and it's like, just imagine like, you know, all the testosterone, plus you have all these people from foreign countries. Some of them barely speak English. And so there's just all this levels of understanding and like people trying to jockey to be like, who's the top dog. Yeah. Some people just want to come and say they hung out with Matt Hughes and Robbie Lawler, you know what I mean? But then the other people are just like, I want to see if I can make it. Like, I want to come out here and see rolling with like the pros, if I can make it kind of thing. So it's just this weird dynamic in the dorms at all times. You know what I mean? Mm. So, it was wild, but it was weird for me too, because it was like living like a second, like college all over again. You know, it was just just crazy. And, you know, it's because we would train really hard during the week, and then, you know, Friday, Saturday night, everybody would get after it. And,
sure.
You know, and just be rough and ready to start the next week, you know what I
mean? So, and so I guess, you know, working there, that is eventually how that kind of led to the opportunity to go on The Ultimate Fighter.
Matt Hughes's
jiu-jitsu coach.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't like, you know, ever think like highly of myself that like, do I think could I have made it there on my own? Yes. But I just don't think the odds would have shaken out. Cause if you think about it, like, I don't remember how many people for my season tried out, but I think like maybe in person there was, you know, 12 or 1300 people or something. And then there was like video submissions that they look at, and like having someone say, hey, this guy's the coach at Matt Hughes gym goes a long way, you know, versus me just having to like wade through the sea of people to try to make myself look different than everyone else. So I'm not going to pretend like, oh man, I just got there on my sheer fighting ability. But I would say this though, that got me to the tryouts, but at the tryouts, I felt like I wowed them. Like as far as like we did, the grappling went great. The striking went great. I really nailed the interviews. Like I made it like, you know, I felt like you had to be
like a kind of a character a little bit.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. For sure. It was just funny. Cause I've said this before too, is that I played the part and I did what I needed to get on the show. But then like on the show, I felt like I was fairly boring because I was like, I want to win and I'm not worried about like getting camera attention. And now in retrospect, I didn't realize how much like building a fan base, how important that is, and how like I should have been more exciting. Cause even in one of the times in the confessionals, like the guy that's interviewing, he's like, yeah, man, what happened to that guy that during tryouts is like, you don't seem like that same guy. And I was like, you know, cause I like, you know, I was boring on the show. Cause I thought, no, I'm just gonna beat everybody up and I'm gonna just do what I need to do to make it in the UFC. And, but in retrospect, like, I mean, I had fans, I had like, you know, like, millions of viewers watch our season, you know what I mean? So it went well, and I did get, you know, plenty of fans and viewership, but could I have like taken it to another level? Absolutely. So, but yeah, in the interviews, like I was a little funny. I played the part.
Well, what was your experience like on The Ultimate Fighter?
Wild. I told people it was literally one of the hardest things I've ever done.
Really?
Like one of the hardest things I've ever done, just like mentally and physically. I think a lot of people just like, I think they kind of like don't realize what it takes. And, cause the one thing is that you're used to like, and I remember getting into arguments with people on the internet back when I cared about that stuff, where people saying like, oh, those fights don't count. I'm like, dude, those fights should count more than any other fights that you have in your career, because you're going from training in your safe camp with all the people, you know, the coaches, you know, you're going literally and you're training with the people you're eventually going to fight. You have coaches that don't know you, so they have to coach you in a general way. You will fight I would fight three times in a year. This was four fights in 6 weeks and I fought 155. So I had to I had to train hard every day, two times a day, go back to the house and live with the people you're going to fight. Not be able to talk to your family, friends, wife, girlfriend, significant other, no contact with the outside world. And so you just have to be really mentally tough upstairs because you're like, man, you're like literally
alone.
Finding that you're alone and then finding a balance of like, I need to train hard, but not really show them everything I've got because eventually when it gets down to us, we're going to have to fight some of those guys. Yeah. And then the whole like mental aspect of I was a big 55er and having to cut make 55 four times in 6 weeks. It was
what were you walking around at back then?
I think I knew on the show it was gonna be tough, so I think I got a little lighter. I probably was like 77.
Still, dude, that's but, fucking nuts.
Yeah, it was tough, man. But it was just like literally one of the hardest things I've ever done because just that whole like you have to like just like you said, being alone, that was a better way to describe it, is like, you're just in your own head. You have to be as mentally tough because you don't have anybody. I mean, we had great coaches. Don't get me wrong. The best coaches like Danaher, Sean Williams, George St. Pierre, and then all the people they brought in. But you got to understand though, those were like, they had our interests in mind and they were great coaches and they showed us stuff. But like I said, they had to like more, like their approach was like generalized. Like we're just going to try to make all seven of you better at the same time, but we can't specifically say Kyle Watson, we're gonna help you with this so you can beat that guy.
You know what I mean?
It's like, yeah, so
that's
what made it really hard, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm sure. Gosh, that I never thought about it like that. But and yeah. So it's a 6 week, you're there for 6 weeks.
6 weeks, no contact. No phone calls unless like someone dies, like while you're gone. Like there's somebody had like a grandma pass away, so they let him have a phone call, but you can't have music. Like they think people would just sit in their room and turn music on and just chill. They want it to they want you to drink and interact, get after each other. Exactly. So, and I understand it. I mean, I totally was on board and I knew what I was getting into. It's just really weird too, like having cameras literally everywhere, even in the bathroom, and you had to sign your life away that they could film it and edit it any way they wanted. And, you've seen
it. I've seen it. I've watched the whole season.
They do some creative editing on a lot of seasons, but fortunately, like I didn't feel like they portrayed, they did. There was a couple things that they mixed the order so they can make it look. They don't ever like make you say something or like they will like lead you. They'll ask you questions, but everything that was said was said. Everything that was done But when they can mix up the order of things, you know, that's how they did Gabe Rudiger dirty, because like, remember they make it like he couldn't make weight on one of the seasons. So there was a part in the show where he ate cake and they made it seem like he did that like while he was struggling making weight. So they made him look like bad, like he couldn't make weight because he was just fucking around, but that wasn't the case. They can mix things around, you know what I mean? So, but I get it. They need to do that to make it exciting
for the show. It's entertainment.
I don't blame them, but.
Yeah, so you ended up making it to the semifinals there, ultimately from there went into the UFC?
Yep.
Is that how that
ended? Yep. So you fight to get on the show. That's really nerve-wracking because you don't know all the other guys that are there. I had only heard of a couple of them. There's a couple guys on there that had fought for the WEC, like Namphan and Brookins. There's a couple guys. There's that JJ Ambrose who didn't make it on, who was like, he came in like as kind of a favorite. He was supposed to be pretty tough, but he got taken out in the first round. But it was just wild because it's just like, think about all the things that got me there. Like one, I went and did the live tryout. I made it past the strike or the grappling. I made it past the striking. I made it past the interview. Made it past the interview with the Spike TV producers because you have to go back and then you do all your physicals and stuff and you do like a longer, like a 20-minute interview with the producers from Spike. Then, even if you make it that far, then it goes to, 28 and you can make it that far and be like, man, I'm in. But then you have your first fight. If you lose, you go home. And it's like everything is riding on that. So stressful. And the guy fought first round, it's like a little nerve wracking because he had beaten Conor McGregor. So I'm like, it's like, okay, this guy's not like a slouch. Right. But I didn't know anything about him. He's tall, lanky. I thought he'd be a striker. He comes out and pulls a guard and I'm like, oh shit, all right,
welcome to my world.
Yeah, exactly. So that ended up being great. Like, yeah, he had submitted Conor on Cage Warriors with like a head and arm choke. So got through him and then choked my next two guys. And then I lost, to the winner, Jonathan Brookins, by decision. I was like, it sucked. It was in my head too. Cause I feel like, man, I just wanted, and I'm not saying like if it would have been different, but I was pretty confident if it wouldn't have been Brookins, it would either have been Michael Johnson or Namphan, and I'm really confident I would have been either of them. Michael, I love him. Michael, if you're listening to this, I love Michael, but I felt pretty good against him in practice. I felt good about that. And Namphan, I feel like the matchup was a good one. But Brookins, every day, the way he fought me is exactly what happened in training. He'd take me down, he'd pin my arms, not try to pass, and he'd just kind of set my guard and pot shot until I get tired. That's all that would happen. So I already had that going into I was already like, I felt like I was beating my head because he did that to me every day in practice. And I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, dude, that's gotta be so hard.
And when we went in that final interview or not final interview, sorry. The final, like we're down to four people. Okay. And Dana pulls us in individually and he's like, all right, teams are over. Don't think yellow versus red anymore. It's like, who do you want to fight to get you in the end? Right. And so I picked Michael Johnson, even though like I got along with him the best and I still to this day I'm good friends with Michael. I just felt like that was the best fight for me. And then but the problem is that Namphan was the only Koscheck guy left and he wanted to fight Johnson and they wanted to have the best chance of it being a yellow red final. So they gave Namphan his wish, which left me with Brookins, and that's how it played out. So you see how like just what a weird web. It could have went any other way, or it could have been I got paired up with somebody else that I didn't match up well with. And never made it on the show, you know? So it's just like, just what a crazy, You know, and also too, I got to tell this too. I don't know if did I tell you about like what I said in the first interview.
I don't know. I don't think so.
That's why, man. Like I said, so many crazy coincidences. Because like I was in my hotel room in Vegas, like waiting to go. You're just sitting in your room, just waiting, and you have like a time when you got to go and do your interview. And I had this all in my head, like what I was going to say. And it was literally, it was so lame. Like looking back on it, it was just kind of like me. I was going to try to sell them on why I was tougher, better, this and that, whatever. I kept going back and forth in my head. And it got to be where like, it was probably 30 minutes, 45 minutes before I'm going to go on. And I'm like, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. Every single person is going in there and saying the same thing. Yeah. And they're probably
the
sick.
Yeah.
And like, they're hearing the same thing. I got to do something different. I got to do something different. So literally in the last 30 minutes, I just changed my mind completely. And, and I just went in there and I just, like, I put my hands on the table and I was like, there's a long, like, boardroom table. And there's all these people sitting around. They're like the UFC producers.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, up to this point, everybody's coming in here telling you how they're badass and they're doing this and that, whatever. Well, I bet you guys are ready to go home and you're bored of this. So like, I'm here to entertain you. I was like, what do you want? I was like, I got jokes. I got impressions. I got show and tell. What do you want? And the guy just goes, a joke. And I go, all right. I was like, how did the Irishman find the sheep in the tall grass? And he's like, how? And I said, very satisfying. and then like nobody really laughed. But one guy goes, doo-doo-ch. And then they like, and that was like it. I mean, it was just kind of like, I think they asked like one or two more questions. They're like, oh, all right, we're done. And I'm like, man, I didn't really sit down. Yeah. And I went out and in my head, I'm like, that either went really well or went really bad. Fortunately, it went really well. You know, because I was just like, I was about ready to, because I can stick out my stomach really weird. And I was going to do my Chuck Liddell impression.
Oh, yeah. Because
I pull my shirt up and I was going to tell the one chick, Jamie, there was one girl at the table. I was going to tell her to calm her hormones down. I was ready, you know, because I wanted to be funny. But it's funny because I literally wasn't going to do that until I just like flipped the switch. And if that wouldn't have happened, I would have been boring as fuck and they wouldn't have had me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we got in the house. I can't remember which guy it is. And I've said this before too, but I can't remember which guy it was. It might've been Spencer Page. I can't remember one of the guys. Cause we all asked like, what did you say? What did you do? And everything was different. Everybody did something different, but literally one of the guys just walked in, slammed his hand on the table and just said, whose dick do I got to suck to get on this show? and they just said, all right, you're done. And that was it. And he was on. That was it. And I'm like, I don't know if we can. So anyway, but we all talked on the show about like what, you know, kind of what, you know, what we all did and said, you know what I mean?
That's hilarious.
That's pretty good. So just, you know, it was different, but I'm just like, that was one of those coincidences where I'm like, man, I look back and I'm like, man, so many things, paths were crossed and odd things to make it all happen the way it happened. You know what I mean? So then made it through all the other stuff. And then, like I said, the other tryouts were crazy. Like, you know, just the way the grappling played out, you know, and then the way the striking played out. And then the second interview I brought the jokes, the charisma, you know what I mean? A little bit different than I, you know, but it was good.
Yeah. And so then, from there you ended up, yeah, obviously you didn't win the Ultimate Fighter, but then you were offered a contract.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Yep. So offered a contract. Well, so they first, so I went, yeah, so I went 3-1 on the show. Then they asked me to fight on the finale. They asked me to fight Sako Chavichi, and he was one of the Armenians that was on Koscheck's team. Because that's how they usually do it. They'll make matches that didn't happen
on the show.
You know what I mean? On the show. And I was good with that matchup. I knew he was tough. Like he was some kind of like national judo champion and he was tough on the show too. I mean, it ended up being kind of like a boring fight because we both respected each other's like ground game and takedown abilities so much that it ended up being like 3 rounds of striking that was kind of lackluster, but I did enough. Like I hit him. I took him down a couple of times. He was just good at getting back up. It's funny. I randomly the other day, I was looking through Google Drive and that fight popped up. So I watched a little bit of it again. And I was like, it was boring, but there was some good stuff. Like I remember like, I hit him with a couple good elbows or a couple times where I hit him with a trip. And he turned and like stood up and I picked him up and dumped him. And so there's a couple like, you know, cool things. I'm like, oh, I forgot that happened. You know, that's kind of cool. But one decision there. And then they asked me to fight. I didn't like that matchup. This is the next one, the one where after they cut me, they asked me to match up with John McDessie, who is from TriStar. And I trained with him when I was at TriStar, but I did really well. I, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I know training is different than a fight. But when I went up to try to start a train, George took us to, this is
after the Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah. After the Ultimate Fighter. No. It was in between. It was after the Ultimate Fighter, but before the finale.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So we went up there and, George like took us to do a bunch of stuff. And like, he took us to this, place called TKO. It's like a boxing club, but they had a ring. And so we got to go and MacDessie showed up that day. And so he and I sparred in the ring and he had some crazy stuff. He throws some axe heels and had more of a traditional kind of wild, like kind of more of a Taekwondo style. And I felt like I did really well with him. So when they asked me about the fights, like, I don't really want to fight someone from George's team because I just trained with this guy. But I was like, I felt like I did well enough with him when we sparred that I'm like, oh, okay, no big deal. But man, that was not how it played out. As most of you know, if you search my name, that's one of the first things that comes out.
Really? This is
John MacDessie knocking me the fuck out. So, I got in my own head and hats off to him. A lot of people will be like, he won because I did something wrong, not because he's good. No, he's talented. You know, he had a bunch of great fights in the UFC. I don't know if he's still with him or not, but I will say I could have performed a lot better. I got in my own head because it's just like, man, I knew Faraz and Faraz knew me inside and out. And they played a great head game when we were out in the ring warming up. I told you the story. We're warming up in the ring and they come out and MacDessie's just shooting takedown after takedown. So we're all warming up in the same spot.
Yeah.
And I'm about to fight him. He's shooting all these takedowns. I'm kind of watching. I'm trying to not make it look like I'm watching, but I'm like, they're pretty good takedowns too. Like he's hitting them double singles over and over and over. And Faraz did it on purpose. He knew I was out there. So then I started like second guessing myself. I started thinking, man, maybe he's going to try the Brookins approach. He's going to try to take me down and then just not let me off my back. And I'm like, oh, so I started second guessing my game plan. And then I started getting nervous. And then I was worn out before I even got into that fight. I was literally like, I was sweating and nervous. And I remember Fury, we were in the bathroom for a while trying to get my head right. And he's like, I remember him saying to me, he could tell something was off. And he goes, I don't know what's going on with you, but he goes, if something's wrong, you need to let me know now. We don't have time for this. Cause he could tell I was like kind of in my own head. And I went out there and fucking didn't even really try to take him down. I just stood up with him the whole time. And I don't remember if it was the second or third round. I mean, I was doing okay. He cut me a little bit. I mean, I landed some shots. I was frustrated. I got him against the cage once. My takedowns out in the open weren't very good at that time. They are now. But at the time, I took everybody down off the cage. The one time I had my best chance, he like grabbed inside my glove. And when I tried to tell, I think Herb Dean was ref. And I tried to tell him. Right as I turned to tell him, my glove, he like spun off the wall. And then I just started getting tired. Like just three rounds of stand-up was not what was in my plan. And he did the perfect fake the low kick. My hands went down like this, spinning back fist, boom. It's fucking out. I'm like, oh, I just joined the club of highlight reels.
Yeah.
So, and then after that, that's where it came back to bite me, coming full circle of when I was boring on the show. And my fights were fairly boring because I would just like, it was, you know, it was a dry hump fest till I got the submission. After that loss, they cut me. So it just sucked. So I went 4-2 within the UFC brand, but, which I'm still proud of,
Man. Yeah. That's a very small club to be in.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's something certainly to be proud of. And then, so from, you know, after that is kind of when, and you were still the coach of the Hit Squad at the time. And then that fell apart, or the Hit Squad closed, right?
It didn't close yet. It took new ownership, and okay. I thought that was my time for departure. You probably know why, yeah. but we'll just leave it at that. So it was my time for my departure, and I was just like ready, like, you know, it was nerve wracking because I was like, it would have been different if I was already kind of retired, and I'm like, now let's do this, but I was still fighting, and. I'm trying to think when, cause I opened that fight was in like February of 11 and I opened my gym of like July of 11. So it's like, and I wasn't done fighting. I signed with Cage Warriors. That was the show that Connor came from.
And in Europe, right?
What's
that's
that?
In Europe.
Right? They had them all over, they had them all over. Most of them is Europe, but I knew the kind of the owner matchmaker guy. And he's like, hey man, he's like, we're in all kinds of awesome cities. Like, you tell me where you want to fight, I'll put you on there, sign a 4-5 deal. Cause I was like, man, there's all these cool places. Like, you fight in London, you fight in Budapest, you can fight in all this. I ultimately fought in Beirut. It was my first fight with them, but it's just like, man, like starting a gym on my own where I'm like super, nervous about going out on my own, try to support my, you know, now wife.
Yeah.
The time we were together, but we were serious, you know, living together. And like, and then still trying to fight. It was like, oh man, it's so hard. So like, you know, I don't, that one is on my record as a loss. I don't count it as a loss. And the only reason why is that I fought a really tough guy. His name was, it was a really weird forename, something Jua Vena Kanan. It was like a Swedish guy. And my coach, I love to death. I love Fury to get to death, but he messaged me. He goes, yeah, man. I think he's a great fit for you, this fight or whatever. So look him up, man. He's 18-5, and almost all 18 are like finishes, and it's a combo. It's like a good mix of knockouts submissions. And submissions. I'm like, coming off of getting cut from the UFC, I was like, this guy looks, and he was in, I just saw him in a articles like MMA Weekly's like top 10 unsigned talent. Like he was in that list. And I'm like, okay, great.
Great matchup,
all right,
huh?
Great. Yeah. Well, let's do it. Let's do it. So I was the main event on this Beirut show. It was the first show that Lebanon, the country of Lebanon, ever had. So like the president or whatever you call the head person of Lebanon was there and everything. It was pretty wild. And it was like a really weird fight because like on paper, I was the better grappler and he was the better striker, but it went the other way. I was getting the better of him on the feet. He took me down a couple of times. So it was real weird, but I shot in for a takedown and he went like this, like, but instead of sprawling. So when I shot, I ran right into his elbow and it clipped me and it cut the scar right here, cut me all the way to the skull. It was like it hit like an artery too. Cause it was spurting and it sucks because he didn't hit me. I just literally shot into his elbow. So I in my mind, it should be a no contest, but they called it a TKO and stopped it. And I'm like, I went all the way there for that. And then, you know, I came home, just had a heart to heart with my wife. I'm like, man, like they didn't pay anything like UFC, and not even the UFC pay was that great. But
and you had opened your
I'd already opened up my school. So I opened in July of 2011, and this fight was February of 2012.
Okay,
so I'm like, man, I'm trying to fight, keep up with elite guys. And then the roadmap was I win like a couple fights. They put me in the 4-man lightweight tournament. I win that. I go back to UFC. So that's saying though, you know, you fight 3 times in a year. Already we're pushing myself out a couple more years. And then that's if I win all of them, I may get back to UFC and I'm already in my 30s. You know, I'm 31 or something like that. I'm like, man, this is not. So I just was so hard to admit it to myself. Even for a couple of years, I didn't say I was retired. And people would even literally a couple of years after my last fight, people would be like, oh, when's your next fight? I'm like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I couldn't say it out loud. You know what I mean? But I was just like, man, I can't run this gym and be the level I need to be. And I could already feel I'm slowing down just a little bit. So we just made the decision but what was really cool though, like totally random stories, like, it's super, super random. But I, when my wife and I lived together before we had our own place, we lived in, first we lived in the dorms together.
So she lived in the dorms.
Yeah, we lived in the dorms. Oh, yep. Yeah. When we were still dating. And so that's how we kind of knew we could probably get along. Cause we lived in a fucking 20 by 20 foot dorm room. And then we moved and we rented like an apartment or like, it was like a duplex and we rented part of it. But just funny because that was in 2000. When we moved in 2011, I guess it would be. Yeah, 2011. So, but anyways, just randomly a couple of days ago, the person that rented that place to us reached out and just said, they found me on Facebook. I didn't remember what they looked like, but our landlords, and they're like, hey, we have a package for you. And I'm like, and I'm like, we didn't know how to get a hold of you. And she's like, I was just going to pitch it, but it looked kind of important. And I was like, well, just save us both some time. It might be trash. Can you just open it up? And it was a royalty check from the UFC for the Topps trading cards.
Huh.
And then I'm like, wait, it's this long later. And I went and picked it up. It was really nice. She did that. Cause she could have just thrown it in the trash.
Yeah.
But it said for the year of 2024, I'm like, I assume there's royalty checks for all of those other years.
2012, 2013.
So there was in the letter, there's like, there's an email. And I was like, I messaged them. And I said, just 2 days ago, I messaged them. I said, hey, here's my new address. And by the way, did I get any checks in between now and then? Just want to know if there's any way I could collect on this. Cause I'm like, cause it was a few hundred dollars. Yeah. Like, and I assume they sold more
earlier,
closer to the time. Yeah. I'm like, it's nice. I don't need it. I don't need that money. But I was just like, it's kind of cool.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, might as well send the email.
I mean, exactly.
It's not going to hurt. And if they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, yeah, you didn't cash any of these for the last 10 years.
Yeah, here you go. Yeah, here's a lump sum.
But it's just pretty wild because she was like, yeah, we were going to throw it in the trash. I'm like, well,
I still have my contract with Topps Trading Cards.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They give you a dollar contract. So you get two contracts. One is like a souvenir contract and the other one's like the actual contract, and they pay you a dollar for your, for when you sign your, when you become professional baseball player. Yeah. So I still have both of those checks. I never cashed either one of them.
Nice. Well, that's what we had to do. Like when we first got there to the show, the same thing. It's like we had to sign the agreement with Topps, and they want us to sign a set amount of cards so they could put autographed ones randomly in the boxes. So we had to sit forever and sign all these cards. And then they were going to give away jerseys too, but they had to be able to actually say that we wore them. So we had to literally just take on and off a whole bunch of jerseys. And, it was just like, yeah, it was pretty random.
Just to say you wore them.
Yeah.
Sign an autograph, take it off, put another one on, sign an autograph.
Yeah. But those are those ones that are hanging in the hallway at the gym. Like, I was like, man, yeah, it took me a while. This sat in the closet forever. I'm like, man, I need to do something with these. Because I had all those people sign them. I had, you know, Mike Tyson and Freddie Roach and all these awesome people sign these. I need to, like, show them. You know?
Oh, so, for sure. Yeah. I feel like that's something that when people are, like, at the gym for the first time, it's definitely something that people stop and look at for sure. I mean, you have a lot of cool posters and stuff in the gym. It's awesome.
That's one thing I regret is I didn't get any autographs from any of the guys that I played with or against or anything like that. And I look back and regret that for sure.
Now, were you ever like, do you ever, I guess before you opened your school, like did you ever consider like going back to the job, or was it just like,
you mean the office job?
Yeah.
No, I'd gotten too used to, man, this is like my dream. Yeah. I got too used to it. And I was like, I feel like I have a different drive than most. I mean, I feel like you guys know more than most the same drive, but I just like, man, I was like, I told my wife this. I was like, if I have to hand out pamphlets at a gas station, I will do whatever it takes
to succeed.
I will do whatever it takes. And, I'm just like that. My brain just works like that. And I was just like, once I was like, man, this could be my life, but I still like, you know, I didn't know. I knew I would be successful to some degree, but I didn't know, like, I didn't know the gym would be the form it is now. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it could even be better, but it's just like, I feel like, you know, I'm just like, either way, I'm going to be successful, whether it's like a mega gym or it's just a normal size gym. You know?
Yeah.
Well, and you picked the perfect time too, just coming right off the Ultimate Fighter and being in the UFC. Like now, like you've got that under your name and it's like, all right, well, no, of course I want to go get coached by somebody that's been on the UFC or Ultimate Fighter. So yeah, I mean, I guess hockey ends in 2 weeks and I will be back up in the gym training. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be like a regular cycle now from April through August is jujitsu. September through March is because I'm skating like three times a week
for this conversation. Yeah. I hear this all the time.
Yeah,
I'll be back on this time of year.
Hey, he sees me every day.
I'm ready. I miss it.
You. But I do hear that a lot. Though, like I'm people sure. are like, "Oh, I got this going on, but I'll see you up there." I'm like, "Yeah, it's 2 years later."
Yeah, one of my favorite things is, you know, I just got to get in shape first.
Yeah,
and I'm like, dude, you're gonna get in shape doing jujitsu. Trust me. How many people do you know that have lost a significant amount of weight?
A ton. And I always say the same thing. I had that conversation where people tell me that they're like, hey, yeah, I'm going to do this first. And I'm always like, you know, the thing is like, and I don't try to be mean about it, but they got to hear that like whatever you're doing now is probably not working. That's why you're seeking me out. So like whatever is not working is going to keep not working. So why don't you try something that will work, you know, come in, just get in shape while you're learning something instead of like, you know, treadmill's boring.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, you can be a marathon runner, guarantee you do a 6 minute round, you're still going to be tired.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like I don't care what kind yeah. of like, yeah. you know, well, it's something you're not used to.
I tell people all the time, the hardest workout I've ever done is a jujitsu class. When I was doing those fundamentals, I mean, nothing's harder than getting your ass kicked for an hour.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. And plus, it's just so different. You're not so used to like squeezing so much and holding your breath.
Yes.
Because people don't even realize they're holding their breath. And then the other thing I think is interesting too, that especially for people who do both, is like the being in shape for one, you're usually not in shape for the other. So you can always like contrast each other. I think if you can be in decent shape for both, like that's kind of what you're, what would be an ideal state unless you're only focusing on one. But I've just noticed a lot of people when they make the switch over, they're like, oh, I thought I was in shape, but no, striking is a different cardio than jiu-jitsu.
Because I did Muay Thai at your gym for probably like the first like year and a half I was there. And like, I remember like, oh, you know, I do jiu-jitsu 5 or 6 days a week. I'm going to be able to go in this and not get, and I remember just being like gassed right away from throwing, you know, I'd brand new to striking at the time and like just no experience with it prior. And just gassing me. I was like, wow, I thought I was in shape. Yes, I'm not.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a whole different thing. But so what's a moment in your jiu-jitsu journey that like completely changed how you viewed the sport?
One single moment. I don't know that it was like one particular thing, but I do think there was like a year to 2 year span where I really started to realize like, and if you had to peg me on which year it was, it would be hard. I'd have to figure it out. But I know for sure there was like a span of time where I just started to like really realize like, hey, you know, this is my program. Not that I didn't know it was already my program, but what I mean is I started really realizing like, I don't have to do something just because that's the way my coach did it, or that's the way I was taught. And it took a little while and I started realizing, man, there's so many things. It's funny because Josh brings this up a lot on his podcast. There's so many things we do that like literally have no bearing on making you a better grappler. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I'm sorry. There's all these like little,
like what are you,
like, just like could be traditions, like whether it's bowing or not even like take that out. I mean, that's still fine from a respect point of view. I'm not like dogging on that, but I'm just saying there's a lot of things where we're like certain types of warmups, there's like all these things like, you know, that like, man, if you sit and just ask yourself the question, did that actually make me a better grappler? Me doing that, did that make me better? And there's so many things that like you do that just, why are we doing that? You know what I mean? And it took me a little while and I started realizing, like, I started like experimenting with things where I'm like, I want to try this series. Like a lot of people don't teach this, or I want to try it differently. Like instead of just teaching it this way, I want to try it a little bit different. Or like, you know, it's how sometimes I'll throw different things in where we'll do like a little mini tournament, or we did some tag team stuff, or we do stuff where we like drill and then take 2 minutes for us to talk about it, or just always mixing things up to try to find different ways. And just anyway, back to the point is of your question is like, it wasn't necessarily one thing, but I think that was the ultimate liberation, was like feeling like, man, I can run this program any way I want. And that could be a detriment if you still run it poorly and you make a bunch of poor decisions, you know, you can run the gym into the ground. But I just thought to myself, like, man, I can always, since it is my gym, I can always have the user experience in mind and my students' best interest in mind. So every decision I make, I want to see, does this have an effect that will make them better at grappling? And does it enhance the user experience? Does it make people want to be at the gym more? And then to hell with the rest, you know, what I mean? It's like, I don't have to do those things. And again, it's not that those things were ever bad. Sometimes doing different things like whatever, bound to a poster or everybody wearing the same gi, sometimes it brings like some solidarity to the team. And sometimes traditions like, you know, makes you like respect where you came from. So I'm not dogging on it in that respect, but I'm just like, now I'm just more like, what will make you get better at what you're paying me for? You know, you're coming in and paying me to be a better version of yourself. Now, how can we do that? You know,
something I notice anytime I go to train anywhere else other than yours is like, you know, the warmups, you know, the, you mentioned it, but like, that seems pretty standard in a lot of places where, you know, you run the laps, you do the forward rolls, you shrimp down the mat, you do all the things. And it's just like, boom, you just wasted like 15 minutes of this hour. You just wasted a 25% of this class, you know? And it's like, you get right into the jiu-jitsu.
People aren't
like,
paying me to learn how to do pushups.
Right.
Now I will say though, there is an occasional time when I see somebody take a nasty spill and I'm like, oh man, I probably should teach breakfalls. So every time somebody would like take it, but that didn't happen very often.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, do we spend, you know, 10 minutes of a class working breakfalls? You know, maybe sometime we should, because I've seen some people eat it pretty good, but it's like, no, I just feel like it's so fucking boring.
It is.
Like, who wants to do that? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
So. Yeah, didn't we learn that in PE class when we were in elementary school? Yeah, how to fall?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. It's just that I'm just so thankful that we don't have to do it. You know, just get a full hour of jiu-jitsu then, you know, and it's like, it's, you know, it's perfect.
Sure.
So, well, you've trained with ton of people, fought all over the world. Is there like anybody that you've trained with that like really like stuck out that you were like, holy shit, this guy is like made of something different? Or
Yeah. I mean, the main ones, like, I mean, I probably I've trained with a bunch of people that like the list is long of people who are really good. So that deserve mention. I mean, Megaton's amazing. Sure. Like, oh, there's our list of like a whole bunch of great jiu-jitsu guys I've gotten my ass kicked by and what have you. But as far as like people who I look more up to the people that like, you know, really changed how I viewed jiu-jitsu and like really impacted, like, jiu-jitsu is way more than I thought it was. I look at it like that. Obviously my old coach Jack was amazing and he gave me a great foothold. He's a great competitor and taught me a lot of great things. But like, I would say like, I'd probably say the four people that like really come to mind that I'm just like, wow. Like I just like remember just being my mind blown is obviously Danaher just being like, wow. Like not only blown away with like how he set up our instructions or set up our practices, I'm sorry. But even just rolling with him and just getting the shit kicked out of me. I mean, I thought on the show, I was one of the better grapplers on the show. You know, as a brown belt, and I was like, I felt like I was, you know, submitting, you know, all of my teammates pretty regularly. But Danaher just, I mean, like literally tapping me five times in a round.
And this
like,
is when he had hair.
Yeah. Danaher. Yeah. So not only did he blow me away, just beating my ass, but also just like in how he did things, his approach is just so cerebral, incredibly strategic. But honestly, I'm naming like three of the four guys I would name were all on the show and they were all amazing. But like one, I still bring in is Sean Williams. Like, I think he has a great depth of knowledge. And the funny thing is him and Danaher came up the ranks exactly the same time. They were like the main kind of guys come up at the exact same time.
Wait, was he at Henzo?
Yeah. And those two were like getting belts at the same time together. And so his understanding is similar. He approaches it different than Danaher, but he's phenomenal. George, obviously, but George more from the standpoint of like, obviously he has all like great knowledge, but George is more like just the process of like learning how to train like a champion trains, learning how to think how a champion thinks, training smarter, not harder, kind of like his approach and his open-mindedness to like be like, I can learn from anyone. He would take, you know, just white belt approach like to life, you know what I mean? And that was amazing with George. And then obviously, you know, the person who gave me my first two degrees in my belt was Octavio Couto, who passed away. But his jiu-jitsu was something I've never seen before. He, like, even different than Danaher's in the sense that, like, the way he, if you hadn't, like, trained, like, with him, it's hard to, like, really qualify, like, you know, what he understood and like what he knew about jiu-jitsu. But it was just like every time, like Trevor knows, cause he trained with him too, but just like you'd come away with like any position and you just be like, wow, I thought I understood that position. I completely changed your mind about everything. And that's what was like really amazing too. Cause, Mark Redding from Texas, he'd done privates weekly with Octavio for years. And every time I would ask him about it, he'd be like, dude, it's literally every single, I train him every week and every single week he shows me something that blows my mind. And I'm just like, man, you think when you're a black belt, like that's got to stop happening after a while. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's like, so anyway, so Octavio for sure, Danaher, GSP and Sean Williams. I'd say if I had to sit and think about it, the list could be long, but I think those four come to top of mind as far as like influential, you know what I mean?
Sure. So. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned jiu-jitsu and stuff like that, like exposing people like mentally, physically, emotionally. What's something that jiu-jitsu's forced you to confront as a person?
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. A good question. I think just like, I don't want to be too cliche about it, but I think it's just the ego thing, because, and a lot of people I think will say that, but I guess the spin I'd put on it is, I think, and Octavio said something great about this, and I'll even lead off with this at seminars to take the edge off, because I know a lot of times people want to roll with me afterwards. And I always say the same thing he said. I repeat what he said. I stole it. It's like, hey, you know what this black belt means? It just means that I've been tapped out thousands more times than all it means. You know what I mean? So it takes a little bit of the edge off that, like, it's like, hey, man, you may catch me. I don't care. Like, I understand jiu-jitsu really well. And at this point, I've been tapped thousands of times. You celebrating it or going home thinking you beat Kyle, that's cool and all, but like, I don't care. You know what I mean? I don't give a, it's a challenging in the gym sometimes, because, you know, you got to portray yourself as the top dog. And so like I continually, when I do jump in or when I train at open mats, you still feel like, okay, God, I got to show the guy that I'm still the man, because then who wants to train with a guy they can beat up on? You know what I mean? So you still have that. But at the same time, I also want people to see that I'm humble enough that like, hey man, if you caught me, I would celebrate it with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I am like that. Like a lot of times I'm like, oh man, I remember one time when Trevor put me unconscious. I still talk about it. Yeah, really. I still talk about it. I thought I had a seizure. I woke up, didn't know where I was. And I'm like, I wasn't mad at all. I was just, first of all, I was relieved that I didn't have a stroke. And then second, I was just like, oh man, that was awesome. Good job. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, Engelbert caught me in an ankle lock. I mean, like, you know, so I think it's just like kind of confronting jujitsu, or jujitsu confronting
the ego,
like, yeah, having to be like, okay, you're to a point where now it doesn't matter. Because the sucky thing is, I say this all the time, is like, if I go with somebody, let's say I got like a good blue belt or an okay purple belt, and I can tap him 100 times, it doesn't matter. I don't feel any better about myself. He probably doesn't feel any better or any worse about himself because he thinks, oh, I'm the boss. But the one time he catches me, he's going to celebrate that shit forever. So it's like one of those things where you just got to get over that. And just be like, it is what it is. You know, sometimes you're just trying something, you make a mistake, you know what I mean? And it is what it is. So I think though, now I guess back to actually answering your question, is I'm in a way better place. Do I like to get tabbed by anybody? No. Do I like to get tabbed by anybody that I feel like I'm better than? Of course not. But am I in a way
competitor in you?
But am I in a way better place about it? Yeah, because I realize in the grand scheme of things, like if you don't put yourself out there and be willing to get tapped, what I mean by that is don't always play your A game. If you're willing to go out there and like just play, I remember it was like I was watching something with what's the guy's really exciting? Gary Tonin, and he was talking about that, like, just saying that like sometimes he'll get tapped like 13 times in like whatever time frame, because he goes, when I go out, I'm just trying to get better at positions. And then if I get caught or get tapped, I just learned, hey, I messed up there, I got to go back, do it again. And like, and he just like, if you're not getting tapped in practice, you're not really attempting to be better because you're not getting out of your comfort zone, trying new things and stuff. So I think like that's been a big thing that jiu-jitsu's kind of allowed me to like tamp down the ego and just be like, you know, I still don't want to get tapped, but if I do, I more like help the person celebrate and then try to figure out what I did wrong and what they did right versus being like, oh fuck, I'm gonna fuck him up next time, you know?
Yeah, because it's like so easy to just to naturally go to your A game,
yeah,
you know? And
yeah,
like I think that takes a like a more mature person to like decide like, okay, I'm working on this specific guard. Like I've been working on this ever since Trevor taught that that tarantula guard seminar. That's like kind of been my, and that's like 6 months ago now. But like I've been diligently working on that, and I'm finally, you know, 6 months in, I'm, you know, having some more success with it at upper belts. But like, I mean, for the first, you know, 4 or 5 months I was doing it, I mean, anytime I try it on a purple belt or higher, I just immediately get passed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck, you know, but like, okay, should I, you know, could I just go right to my more A game half guard stuff? Yeah. But like, I want to work on this new thing and I'm going to try to get better at that. But like, you know, you're going to lose a lot of times before you eventually start seeing some success with it. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. It's just, you know, humbling for sure. Yeah. So,
well, one thing somebody told me too, that was interesting. I try to do this too, like with my own students, like obviously like I don't care as much. I just want to help them and we roll, we have fun, whatever. But it's just funny. I remember back, there was a guy I competed a bunch against as a lower belt, and we kind of almost had like a little rivalry kind. And one time he came and trained with me, but we hadn't trained since competing against each other. And we were like pretty vicious at each other. And I'm looking at it more like, oh, now it's loose. And like, play around. No big deal. Whatever. The second we started and I started playing loose, he slapped me in like the hardest, like Japanese necktie. It like cranked the fuck out of my neck. I'm like, all right, motherfucker.
It's on now.
It's on. But anyway, I was telling somebody that story and they're like, no, that's not how you do it. What you do is in those situations, the first round, you make them respect you. Cause then once you get a couple taps out of the way, then you can just be like, oh, now it doesn't matter. And then you can roll. So ever since then, now when I roll somebody, not my own students, but if I roll with somebody, like I try to beat the brakes off them the first round. Cause then if you tap them like 2 or 3 times in that first round, then what happens the rounds after that doesn't matter. Cause you already kind of asserted your dominance. So I try to do that now too. Yeah. Learn my lesson.
I like that approach. What would you say is like some of the most common mistakes you see like newer jiu-jitsu people like when they're first starting, and like what would you recommend of like fixing that? Like, is there any like very common problems that you see like regularly that everybody does?
Yeah, I just think it's like the shift of focus, and or the focus is shifted in the wrong direction. And it's hard because like no matter how many times I could say this, if I sat you down and I'm like, listen, what I'm about to tell you will make you better than all the other people, they're not going to listen. Because everybody wants submissions are what sells jiu-jitsu. That's the sexy part, you know, and everybody wants to be the person who submits everyone, even if they're not an egotistical person. That's the allure, you know, to sure. jiu-jitsu. So the non-sexy part is being really good at escaping everything. So I think just in the beginning, you'll hear other people say the same thing. Like other black belts will say, like they'll say, like white belt's all about survival. And yeah, but I mean, I'm not saying don't learn how to submit someone when you're a white belt. I'm just saying though, if you put your emphasis on escaping the main positions, and you just focused on that for like a year, like man, you'd be so, so much better. Because the problem is people always like want to do the YouTube stuff or they want to win. The problem is they haven't learned how to outmaneuver the person. They haven't learned how to outposition the person. So I may understand the triangle really well, or the armbar really well. Well, they don't know that either, but let's just say they do. They're never in the right position and the right timing to do it. So if I'm really good at an armbar, but you're always mounting me and I never mount you, do I get to use the armbar? No. But if you can escape everything pretty well and constantly stay out of danger, then you have the freedom now to attack pretty relentlessly, because it doesn't matter if you mess up. There, you know what I mean? So if I just set someone down, I'd be like, listen, start mount, rear mount, side control. And these are the way these are the highest percentage ways out. Get somebody just slightly better than you, drill the shit out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'd even start, like, I'd even take a step further and say turtle too. Spend a lot of time getting to turtle and escaping turtle, because that enhances so many things. That'll later down the road will make your guard retention better and make your takedowns better. Yeah,
you're not so, afraid to be there.
But if I sat someone down that has no concept of what they're gonna be learning or what they need to learn, they'll be like, all right, Kyle, give me some good advice. When they go in, they see that sexy arm bar. They're like, no, I'm doing the arm bar today.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or whatever I saw on YouTube. So that's what I would say.
Well, I mean, let's be honest too. You're going to be defending yourself more than you are going to be on the attack in
most of
your entire career. So might as well be good at it. I mean, I've always been more defensive minded in everything and then sports that I play anyway. I mean, hockey, I'm a defenseman. On baseball, I was a pitcher. So I never got to do the offensive side of things. I was always on the defensive side of things. Yeah. It's like when I started last year, Zach's like, well, just so you know, like, you're not going to learn anything sexy right off the bat. You're just going to learn how, like, defense and how to get out of things. I'm like, honestly, like, that's what I'm looking forward to. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. Because I know that I'm going to be getting my ass kicked for a really long time. So I better learn how to get out of this.
Yeah. Like, we're on the subject and it made me think of it because I remember coming back from my knee surgery for like 6 weeks, right? You know, I wasn't exactly clear to be back, but I like came back and I was like, all right, all I did was just showed up to open mat and I just had people take my back. And I was like, I'm going to work on rear mount escapes, cause that's like a position where I'm not really using my knees at all. I can just work on, you know, getting my back to the floor, you know, just getting, you know, clearing the bottom hook, getting back to a better position. And honestly, like to this day, I still feel like rear mount of all the side control, rear mount, I think my rear mount defense is probably my best defense. Like, absolutely. I feel like I get someone takes my back, I'm not as worried. I'm like, I'm pretty confident that I can get out of here or at least survive. And, but that was like, just while we're on that subject, that definitely made me think of that. Yeah. But,
so it goes back to the saying, the best offense is a good defense.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. So what's your, approach to handling, plateaus when it comes to training?
Yeah. I actually get asked that quite a bit, and I say a lot too, that those are the biggest enemies to jiu-jitsu and longevity would be plateaus and injuries. Those are two of the main things. I used to say a third and I can't remember what it is off my head, but plateaus are bad because your morale starts to go down. You know what I mean? You start to like, and then when your morale starts going down, you start looking at jiu-jitsu as not as fun as it used to be. kind of start to, your interest starts to wane a little bit. So the first part of plateau is recognizing you're in one. A lot of people don't even realize they're kind of in one until they're already kind of in a funk and like in a bad mood about it. So it's kind of like, I think there's a couple of ways. But I think if you just set like timed goals around your training, I think you're less likely. What I mean is like just changing it up, saying like, I'm only going to work this, or this is my A game up until this time frame, and then completely switching it that way. So it keeps it spicy and like keeps things a little more exciting. I think that's important, because then it's harder to be in a plateau when you're like changing it up. Things, you know? Yeah. Yeah. And obviously it's different. If you're a competitor, like obviously you have to time things around when you're in a tournament. Right. But if you're not competing, you're just trying to get better at the art, then I think that's a big part, is like trying to switch things up. And a lot of times people don't switch things up because they're like saying, well, I'm not good at this yet. I'm trying to be good at this. I don't feel like I'm hitting it on everyone. That's okay. Like, you're still making progress. And if you stay on something too long, you'll fall into that rut without even really realizing you're in the rut. And then the other thing is, once you're kind of in a plateau and you realize you are in one, then I think you just need something to like boost the morale, get you back on track. And that could be, I usually tell people like a small list of things. One could be, go to a seminar, you know, go to another school, like cross train. Because you're used to this going with the same people and they all can beat your stuff, but watch, all of a sudden now the thing you're working, well, I know it's coming, now it'll work and you get excited about it again. Cross train, go to another seminar, maybe do a private lesson, you know, with somebody. Or maybe like pick something that is either like tangentially related to what you're already good at, so it's like close, but something different that you don't know, or just something that's way out of your comfort zone. Just do a big dive into something. You just like, for me, like when I first started like diving into heel hooks, like, man, I don't understand heel hooks really well. And I was like, now it's a downside, not only for myself, if I compete in something that allows them, but also it's a detriment for my students, because then when people come to me and say, hey, why don't you teach heel hooks? Like, oh, it's
good. I don't want to say
like, oh, it's because I don't understand them very well. That's not very fair. Right. I've had people in the past, I won't name names, but I've had people in the past just say, oh, I don't play that. And that's the answer to your question. Oh, I don't play that. So now you have to go find the answer somewhere else. That's not a good coach. Good coach is the one like, if I don't know the answer, I'm going to find the answer for you, and I'm going to know the answer. You know?
Yeah.
So I think it's sometimes just getting, so anyway, back to that example, is like, I wasn't comfortable. So I just said, 6 months, just doing nothing but heel hooks, understanding the position better. And then, like, oh man, I feel pretty good. Now, is that my A game? No. But do I feel competent teaching it and playing it if I had to? Yes. So I would say those things. Cross train a little bit, maybe go to a seminar, maybe do a private lesson, just something that'll shake up the routine that, maybe watch an instructional, you know, like there's one called the Rack.
Yeah. We're both in it.
Yeah. it's funny. Never mind. That's a story. Not for the podcast. I'll maybe tell it later. just shake it up a little bit, you know, just get, you know, something to, cause I've noticed that myself, is just even because I haven't been, I'm trying to think of the last one I went to. Oh yeah, I went to Raphael Lang seminar. So I still enjoy being the student, and it's like, and sometimes I go and I see like, oh man, he taught it in a different way, and I like that way. I'm like, man. So some of the times the methods and the process are nice, but even for myself, but I just say to that person, you just got to shake things up.
If you could only train three techniques the rest of your life, what would they be?
Three techniques. I would say train.
That's a tough question.
It's a super tough.
Heel hooks.
No. I mean, for me, it would need to be like the progression. Like I would work a takedown. Or yes, for specifics.
Yeah, I would say like a takedown, a pass,
and a submission. Yeah. And so, you know, like I would,
I guess I could probably guess yours, or yeah, not guess, but I like, no, I've trained with you enough
you
that
think?
I know what you,
so what do you think? I'll put you on the spot.
Arm drag inside trip.
Bingo is one.
Some sort of smash pass, you know, probably maybe the near side underhook.
Yeah.
Or probably near side or body lock, yeah, to pass. And then to mount and maybe like a some sort of wrist lock.
Yeah, wrist lock would be good.
Well, like an arm choke, maybe.
I think like right now, like Treagle Pot is like is my thing. But yeah, but you're right. But back to your question is that's what I would do. I would want to do something that would encapsulate all of the
one,
game,
one into the other.
Yeah. That was a good question, though. That was terrible.
Yeah,
it'd be so hard. Yeah, it'd be so hard. It's like that question. They like it. It always hits home, but it's so true. Like I've been to like marketing seminars before where they ask this question where they'll be like, it's a little unrelated, but somewhat related. They'll be like, okay, how many of you would sell your black belt for X amount, whatever? And you know, so many people would raise their hand. They're like, all right, well now though, if you sold it, all the memories, all the friendships you made, all the connections you made over the years, all your travel, all the experiences, everything that came with that black belt would all be gone too. And then they start going money. And like, it went all the way down to like, we're talking like millions. And then there was like, when it got to like 1.5 million, you know, there's a couple of hands will go up, but most people wouldn't. And then it's just like thinking about like, man, when you have something that money can't buy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
well, like, I mean, even at, I don't even have a black belt, but like, I don't think I'd trade my purple belt for anything.
Yeah.
You know, like other than like my kids,
yeah.
You know, and my wife, maybe, you know, that would probably be it. Like that's other than my kids, my wife and my career, like jiu-jitsu is right there. Number three.
My wife makes that joke sometimes about like, if you had to pick between, she'll do some would you rather jiu-jitsu or this. I'm like, I'll say the right thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't want to hear my, I'm going to tell you what you want to hear, not really what I want to say.
I had that question asked when I first got drafted. We talked about it on one of the last shows. And I was like, I've been in love with baseball a lot longer. I've been in love with you. So I'm going to go play baseball.
Yeah, he had a chick that basically like, you have to choose me or baseball.
Oh, man. That hurts. That hurts.
Yeah. It's all right. It wasn't meant to be.
I want to switch gears here a little bit. And so you're a real estate investor as well. How did that come about?
Yeah. So I just like, I'd say a combination of like, you know, happenstance and hard work. You know, I mean, I was always interested in it. I shouldn't say I was always that. I take that back. I was interested in it when I, you know, was really trying to think about like, what's my future going to look like. So I was already a little older. I don't know exactly when I was like started looking into it, but I had a realtor who trained jiu-jitsu, and he's the one that found my house in the city that I lived in. He's also the one that found my gym. And so he's done, he's hit a couple home runs for me. And he, you know, when we decided we didn't want to live in the city anymore, when I had my kid, we moved over to Illinois and built, but he's like, hey man, you should turn that into an Airbnb or whatever, or rent it or whatever. So I did that, but I didn't know anything about landlording. Like, oh my God, like what did I get myself into? So that didn't go very well. He's like, well, why don't you sell it? The market's hot right now. You make a lot of money. And so I did, and I did really well on that, on the sale of that house. And so I started thinking, man, what am I going to do with this money? I want to parlay that into something. And I was already interested in real estate. So man, I just started listening to podcast after podcast after podcast, read a couple of books. And at first I thought about like doing like a small apartment complex. And then after like looking into it, I'm like, what am I thinking? I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe not start big like that. I'm like, maybe get my hands dirty doing a single family home or two. And then I asked a lot of people that I knew were already doing it and asked them a lot of questions and, you know,
white belt mentality.
Yeah. Just try to like, and then I just took what they told me and I thought, man, systems I'm already doing at the gym, I could easily mesh those. And I think I can do what they're doing, but I think I can do it better. Not a knock on them. I just think I can do. You know, so I used that money from selling our house and I bought two right off the bat, like two deals. Like we're like, and that was back when rates were good. Everything was like pretty good. Easier to rationalize.
Things work. Yeah.
So I just did two at the same time. So that was a little wild, but then I was like, oh man, this recipe is working. Yeah. So then I did another two at the same time. I found two more that like kind of landed about the same time. And I told myself I just wanted to do five. That was it. Cause I'm like, man, the gym's my gig. I'll get crazy with this, whatever. Yeah. So then I did, got the fifth one. And then I was like, you know, when everything's going smooth and you don't hear from any tenants, you're like, oh, I can do this. I can just keep doing this. I'll just do more. You know what I mean? So that's what I did. And I was like, I'm going to teach my wife to do this. And since she's just working part-time hospital, she could do this as well. And we can just increase our income a little more. So I found another one. I was like, okay, here's number six. And, but I'm kind of a control freak. Not really, but kind of when it comes to certain things. So I was, it was supposed to show her the ropes, but I ended up doing everything. And so like, fuck, that didn't work. So then I had number six. And I'm like, all right, now this time for real, I'm going to show her how to do it. So I got a seventh one. And I'm like, and I did show her how to do it. But after the process, I just could kind of tell she's just like, isn't into it. She's like, this isn't my thing. So I end up now I have seven.
Yeah.
And I was like, I probably should stop. I could, I just told you, yeah. I'm probably going to look at one tomorrow because I'm an idiot. but it's like, you know, but I still come back to like, man, there's so much more room for growth at the gym as far as not necessarily growing this way, but growing this way, you know, of like just working on a bunch of processes in the background to like really enhance the gym more. And I know where my bread's buttered, so to speak. So I'm like, the real estate's cool, but like, I know the gym's gig, you know what I mean? So I'm trying not to get too crazy. Would I like to have like 10 just to make it nice, even
a nice, even yeah, nice yeah. and even double
yeah.
digits.
Yeah. 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 So, but, and that might happen. My son gets a little older. He has like a great couple opportunities. You can learn how to run a gym.
Yeah.
He can learn real estate. You can do a little bit of both. You know, maybe pass on a couple of the houses to him. So he starts a good head start or something.
Yeah. We've talked about doing similar things with our kids, you know, kind of like heard the idea of people like buying a house for like, you know, when the kid's young and like, okay, this is going to be his house when he grad, you know, like when he gets 18, this is, you know, his, he can keep it as a rental. He can turn it into a, or he can kick the tenant out. He can move into, this could be his house, or, you know, you could sell it and use that to start a business, go to college, do whatever, you know, which I thought that's kind of a cool concept.
Absolutely.
You know, it's something we've talked about doing, haven't really pulled the trigger on it, but I just thought it was like a cool idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and you're a father as well.
Yeah.
So recently got Reed into wrestling, right?
Yeah. Just had a second season, and then they're actually offering a spring, like short duration practices. So he's about to start tonight. Actually, tonight's his first night for. I mean, he just ended a couple weeks ago for a regular season, but now they're doing like a spring extra. So he'll just do like a month spring. Month. Yeah. So it's one of those things where it's like I'm not forcing him. And he's not like, love it. Like, dad, I can't wait to go to wrestling. But he also isn't like when he tried the other sports like baseball and stuff and
wasn't really
soccer.
Into
he was just kind of and like act like he didn't go. Now it's like, you know, he has fun at practice. I don't think he likes competing too much, but he's done a shitload of turns. I'm like thinking, man, I would ate this up when I was a kid. Like he's already, I didn't realize how much they compete. And like we were putting him, every weekend. Yeah. Like, the kid's already got like, you know, probably, 35 matches or something. That's crazy. Like, I would love that. But he's not super like into competing, but I think he likes.
Well, it's nerve wracking, man. I mean, I compete all the time. I've competed a lot, but I still get nervous before I compete. Yeah. And, you know,
I do too.
You do too. It's just it's a natural thing. It's nerve wracking, you know, cause it's just, you play through all the scenarios in your head. And, you know, you don't want to, you have everybody watching. It's just like, it's a scary thing.
Yeah. And a lot of times that's the case. A lot of times it isn't who's better at jujitsu. It's who's
better that day,
who manages their nerves better. I mean, it's like both guys are probably, especially my little, like the black belts. I know everybody I face is going to be skilled. It's just that I have to, you know, make sure you kind of fight the inner demons a little bit better than they do. And then get your strategy going, you know?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Was there a certain age that you recommend kids getting into wrestling or jujitsu, or would you say starting with wrestling so they can learn that base of grappling before moving into jujitsu?
I do. I think wrestling, honestly, like jujitsu, and this isn't like a knock on, and I joke around all the time in class about like butt scooting versus wrestling, whatever. But I just really feel like wrestling right off the bat is so much more like teaches you like perseverance and kind of sink or swim, because it's just harder.
Yeah.
It's just harder.
Like the culture
of it. Not that like jujitsu or that wrestling is a harder sport in the sense of like, you're both learning to try to out jockey your opponent for position. I mean, harder in the sense that like just less forgiving, like you can come out, sit on your butt. And like someone, whoever says, I don't know, it was Dana or somebody saying how like you could be a world champion without ever learning a single thing. I mean, there's people like that. You just get to be a really good butt scooter and hard to pass guard, and that's all. And not to say that there's anything wrong with that, but I think the foundation of being able to always dictate when and how it goes to the ground is an amazing foundation for when you say, okay, well, now when it does go to the ground, I've not only dictated it, but now I know what to do to you once we're down there. Right. And so I think, you know, a lot of people say, hey, start kids. I think in an ideal world where you were like, if you weren't that pressure parent where you're like, I want my kid to do this, 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 and you just took that out of it and said, you want to set them up for the best success in a grappling sport, start them like young in like some gymnastics classes so they can learn their body, learn their, like, you know, their body awareness, and then wrestling, say 5, 6, 7, whatever the youngest they start them at, and then have them wrestle. And then when they get a little bit older, have them do
everything. I think the same, you know, and like the having, you know, wrestled in high school and stuff. Like that's one thing I noticed when I got to when I started training jiu-jitsu is like, it's like definitely a different like culture. Yeah. I feel like, you know, it's like jiu-jitsu is a lot more like relaxed than wrestling. Yeah. Like the wrestling practices I remember just were brutal, you know, like it's just like every single time.
Everything's a grind
and everything's a fight. And like, there's no like, you know, kind of easier rounds or like, you know, when you're on bottom of wrestling, like you're not hanging out, like you're trying to get up, you know, whereas when jiu-jitsu, like I can hold someone on my guard here for a minute. I can, you know, hold them here for a second, catch my breath, and then, you know, go on to the next thing. Whereas wrestling, it's just like go the whole time. And you gotta get up. And absolutely, it's just like kind of a different culture.
Yeah. And I say all the time, the guys that I feel like some of the toughest guys that I've training room been in are guys that have a really sling pedigree, but then got decent jiu-jitsu after the fact. I feel like those guys. And even my son, like, you know, I always joke like that he's not very good, and he's not, but it's not like because like I'm like, oh my God, like I'm gonna get hard on him about it. I just think that he didn't play enough sports where he really learned his body. So I don't think he's klutzy at all. But if you just watch him, he doesn't like really kind of know how to move himself yet. He doesn't really like he loves like roughhousing and wrestling around like on the mats and stuff like that. But he's you just tell he just kind of his balance isn't there, and like not a ton of coordination. So it's more of that. I think if he had a little bit more body awareness, I think he would perform better. But you know,
he's a kid.
He's not. How old?
A
kid.
9.
Yeah.
I'm like, I just want to have fun. Right. Fun, and I do want him to have a little bit of perseverance. It's like, you know, hey, lose some matches, pick yourself up. You know, hey, be better. You got to work a little. So I want a little bit.
Yeah,
totally agree. How do you see jiu-jitsu evolving over the next like 10 to 20 years? Do you think that there'll be like, I know there was like the kind of leg lock revolution that kind of happened, you know, what, like, I don't know. I mean, Danaher kind of started that whole thing, but like, I know that was like a big kind of turning point in jiu-jitsu. Do you see like anything in the future that it could be like the next thing, or like, or do you see
like the meta? I don't
curious. Like,
you know, I don't know. Well, it's hard because it's like, there's like some of the things. Yeah, you don't know what you don't know. And it's like some of the things that have happened, like I couldn't have forecasted myself. But I just think that now I noticed this, like anytime I think, oh man, there can't be any, like all the moves have been invented.
Yeah.
Can't be invented. Nothing else can be invented. You know what I mean? It's like,
there's always something that pops up.
Yeah. And it's not even always that it's like this new move. It just might be like a more efficient or clever way to get to something that's already exists, or like a more efficient use. And so one thing, I still think this is happening now, but I don't think it's been fully explored. We had that leg lock revolution. I agree. And I heard someone even a few years back saying that they didn't feel like the attacks, the seamless attacks moving from upper body to lower body hadn't really been fully kind of like invested in. And I feel like people have gotten better at that and moved towards that, but I feel like there's still a lot more there. The hips or head idea. Mm. I feel like there's a lot more to be had where people have, you know, people have great upper body attacks and great lower body attacks, but more like using one to set up the other. I feel like there's still a lot of room for growth there, if that makes sense.
Kind of like leg entries you were doing a while back, like the K guard stuff, and then like getting into the back. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah. Or like anything where like, if you like, here's an example, like go for K guard. And when they try to pull back, you go for a Choi bar instead. Like you go from go for like an omoplata, they posture up and then you go to K guard. You know what I mean? Like things like that. I mean, that stuff exists. I more just mean like, I just feel like there's room for growth in that area where I feel like there can be more seamless attacking, moving across the waist. You know what I mean? But as far as like where I see it moving, I just think that like, man, there's just so many good, like people doing it younger that like, man, you go and watch and like, I hate to say this, but I admit like that's part of the tamping down the ego, man. I'll go to some of these tournaments. I'll watch some of these like young blue belts. I'm like, I think that kid would beat me. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's crazy. Cause you have these kids that are starting when they're freaking, they're doing jujitsu at a pretty good academy that has a good teacher. They're starting at 5 or 6 years old. And then they're a blue belt when they're 16. Yeah. So they had like, you know, 10 years of training already.
Yeah, but they're not a real blue belt. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And then like you're watching, like, I'm like, this kid hit a perfect barambolo, or this kid, you know, hit something I'm not even good at. You know what I mean? It's like, and so I guess what I'm getting at is like seeing that keep layering where, okay, now this new guard has come in that started training earlier, and now they're building, now the next guard is building off of that crew, and then now they're starting younger with even more efficient techniques, and then the next guard's starting with even more efficient techniques. So it's just kind of like one of those where I was watching Panther product VHS tapes of guys in Speedos fighting Vale Tudo.
Right.
Now people can literally learn any technique at any moment in time and then have mats and people to help you with it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's just like, so I just think that like, I think it's like kind of almost disappointing, depressing in the sense that like, not that I care if my kid ever competes, but just thinking like, okay, he's already 9, saying like, okay, maybe he gets into it in the next few years and then maybe he wants to compete. Might be going against these kids that have already been training 10 years. And it's like, how's he going to beat? Yeah. You know, so it's like kind of defeating in that sense. So it's just like thinking, man, like the kids, the game of tomorrow will be so efficient. Slash you combine that with youthfulness and, you know, you get some of these kids that have this X factor where they're just like, you know, like Mika Galvao, who just like, just can just pull shit out of nowhere. You know, he just has this X factor. So I just think the game is just going to be crazy. Like, there's a lot of people that are going to be left behind is kind of what I'm getting at. But the cool thing about it is, like, while that can be disappointing, that's more like when you're thinking of competition. The cool thing is jiu-jitsu still will be there for everyone. If you don't care about that, you don't care about the competition aspect, like, you will still get all the benefits, the life-changing improvements from jiu-jitsu. Yeah. And then your coach will probably be better at teaching it.
I mean, jiu-jitsu's improved my life significantly. Like, I mean, it's one of the best things I've ever done. I mean, it's done nothing but improve my life in every way, shape, or form. And definitely one of the best things I ever did. And I mean, I recommend it. I mean, I talk about it on here enough.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing too, is just like, it's getting out there more. I mean,
oh yeah,
you just hear more and more people get into jiu-jitsu. And you've been in it for how long? I mean, the growth of it over since you started your gym is probably insane how much it's grown, and it's going to be exciting to kind of see where it continues to grow. I mean, you were telling me when you first got into it, I mean, there might be 100 people that show up at a tournament.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah,
now
yeah,
there's like 1,000 people.
Yeah. Cause I remember I was talking to Rich, you know, I mean, it was probably a year ago now, but it was like before a Fuji tournament, like the local Fuji here, which is usually like the biggest one. Cause that's kind of the one that all the lower belts do and everything. I think he was like looking at the people that signed up like the year before, it was like 100 or 150 people. And then the following year it was like 500.
That's crazy.
So it was just like a crazy jump in a year. Like there's that many more people training, many more people wanting to compete. So it's just like, it's crazy how much it's grown. I mean, I've been doing it for, you know, like 6.5 years, and just like seeing how many more people and like how more mainstream it is. And it was still pretty mainstream when I started it, you know, but it's just grown even more since then. It's just crazy.
What do you think that has to do with the growth of UFC becoming more popular, or do you think it's just the ease of getting the knowledge, just because, I mean, like you said, you could watch it on your phone from anywhere.
Well, and I think it's also like the cheerleaders, like Joe Rogan and people look up to that are like constantly talking about it, you know, and you're like, oh, maybe there's something to that. If this guy says, you know,
yeah, Rogan, Jocko, all these people.
What was the tournament that he just did not too long ago? Or was it Rogan?
Rogan didn't do it.
I thought there was a celebrity that just did a tournament not too long ago. But like, how cool would that be to go
Like Mario Lopez.
Tom Hardy.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. I'm like, how cool would that be to just, you know, you get to that point
Mark Zuckerberg.
You're gonna go get into a tournament and you get to fucking roll with these guys
I think that says it right there. It's like these guys are doing it. It's like there's gotta be something to it.
Right.
Especially when you have one of the richest guys in the world who like could be doing anything with his time and money. He's like, he sees the value in jiu-jitsu.
And just look at how he's changed like over the course of the last, because I mean, what, it started coming out a handful of years ago when who was he going to fight? Elon Musk. I mean, like he started out looking like
kind of a lizard person. Yeah. Now he actually looks like a normal, athletic dude, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because too, I was saying this to someone the other day that I was like, back in the day when I had my gym or even his quad, like people would come in and they'd train somewhere else. And there's a good chance if they trained somewhere, then I'd be like, oh, where did you train? That like, I'd either heard of the academy or I knew the coach. Mm-hmm. Now it's like somebody comes in and it's like, you know, oh, I'm from Rising Phoenix, you know, pit viper, killer, whatever, something or other. And I train under this guy and I'm like, oh, cool. I just say, oh, cool. Cause I'm like, and it's not any disrespect. They might be great,
sure.
But I'm just like, yeah, I never heard of. There's so many good people out there. There's so many black belts. Plus there's so many great coaches that maybe they're not even black belt. They might be purple or brown or whatever, but just you can't.
Right.
Well, yeah, it's just crazy because, like, I mean, when I first started, you know, like I trained under Ezra to start, and he was the only black belt there. And then, you know, going to your gym, there was, you know, first starting there 4 years ago or five years ago now, and it was, you know, there was like two or three, you know, like there was, you know, Mike Allen and a couple others. And now it's like, I mean, I remember looking around at class on was that Monday night, and you know, I think there was four or five black belts just like in class, you know, like as students, and it was just like, whoa, this is crazy.
Yeah, in advanced class, the talent has been just like, there's some days I'm like walking around the advanced room and there's like, you know, there's like 30 people in advanced, which the advanced class has grown. And I'll look around, I'm like, man, this talent, I like watching. I'll be like almost as a fan. I'm like, instead of coaching, I'm like watching the matches. I'm like, oh, that was awesome. Oh, that was awesome. You know, and it's like, and I even said that out loud to the guys. Like, guys, can you imagine? I was like, I know it'll like, some people might think it would look McDojo-y if you walked in and like it's a room full of black belts. You think, oh, this guy's just giving. But I was like, if you think about it, you guys stick with it. I mean, we have a handful of black belts and brown belts and purple belts. I was like, can you imagine walking into this room in a few years? It's a little bit bigger, and then like half the class is black belts. That'd be fucking amazing.
Dude, I mean, so cool.
How does that make you feel as a coach to know, like, hey, you know what? Because I know you're not just giving them out.
Yeah.
Just like Zach said, some gyms were just like, oh, participation trophies. They've done it long enough. Yeah. We're just going to award them. How does that make you feel as a coach, like, knowing that what you've done and at your gym and how it's grown has produced what it's produced?
Man, it's awesome, but like, you know, I never like rest on that. Like, it's kind of like, you know, I've even been thinking about that a lot lately, and I've been doing a bunch of stuff kind of behind the scenes trying to like tweak our processes and try to just make things more efficient. But what I've been thinking about and kind of praying about and behind the scenes is like, not that it only, I don't want this to sound all like kind of hoity-toity, but I really have been trying to like pray that it doesn't just make the gym better financially. It just gives me the ability to help more people. And remember back the focus, because there's sometimes where like I feel like, man, I just kind of like was worried about the finances, worried about the, you know, like making the gym look cool and this and that or whatever. And then I got to remind myself, you know, what was it like at that first gym? It was really small, and I cared about every, and I still care about everybody, but I just remember like being more like really worried about the people more than like everything else. And I just keep trying to remind myself more lately that Kyle to still be present, that it's like that, like I do want to increase the revenue at the gym, but I also alongside that, I want the user experience to keep going up. And I also want to see more transformations and see that it isn't about the finances, that I see more people get their black belt, like they stay the course, all things will improve on the way to that black belt. And just see that, like, you know, I just feel like there's a lot of times where I sit there and I feel like I was meant for more, like I haven't done some things I'm proud of. I've done a lot of things I'm proud of, but I feel like I was scratching the surface. I feel like, man, there's so much more I could be doing. So many more people I could feel like. I had one guy come in that signed up and he's been there now, maybe about 5 months, 6 months. I could tell he was digging it. Older guy, came up and he goes, "Hey man, I just want to let you know that I feel like this gym has given me a new lease on life." He goes, "I feel like I get to start over. This is like something." He's like in his 50s. And he's like, he's just like, I love being here. And I was like, "Oh," I was like, "Oh, that's so awesome, man." Yeah. I was like, I want more of those. More like, you know, so like, I just think that there's, like I said, I think I'm scratching the surface. I think there's a lot more.
Yeah. Well, Kyle, this was amazing having you on, man. It's been a blast. Yeah. I appreciate you coming on again. And, you know, thank you. Thank you for everything you've done for me. Yeah. And I just can't thank you enough. And I feel so grateful to have you in my life.
Yeah,
so,
man. I appreciate that. Thanks for the invite. I'm no stranger to talking. I talk a lot, you know, so if I didn't ramble too much,
perfect,
man. But I felt like I was a little more awake this time. Not that I enjoyed being there the last time, but I felt like, man, I didn't have enough.
It's a new studio.
Yeah. 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 I just felt like I was kind of like, you know, so I'm glad we got to do it again. So I appreciate the invite.
Well, I don't know if we did this on the first time, but we end the show with a fun question called the Tombstone Game. I'm not sure if we were playing it when you were on the last, but here lies Kyle. What's it say on your tombstone?
Funny or serious?
Whatever you want.
Whatever you want.
Yeah. A mixture of both.
Be if the zombie apocalypse happens and you're reading this, you're the first to go. No, I'm just kidding. It'd probably be something a follower of Christ, dad, a husband, and a lifelong learner.
Perfect. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks again. And thank you to everybody that is watching at home. If you haven't clicked that subscribe button yet for us, if you could do so, that would help us out a ton. Click that like button as well. Comment what you thought below, and we will see you next time.